Blog Talk Radio. Walter Reuther, Walter Reuther died in a mysterious airplane crash in 1970, United Auto Workers. And two authors died on this day. James Jones, who wrote From Here to Eternity, made a great movie with Burt Lancaster. Nelson Algren, Man with the Golden Arm, about Junkie. I think Frank Sinatra was in that one. And also we had a great musician, Rudolph Serkin, and his son, Peter Serkin, great pianist, born on this day. Among the events today, just a second, I've got to flip the page. I'm a little slow today. Hurt my back. The British Parliament banned slavery in 1788, and among the famous names, later the founder of the Methodist religion, Wilberforce, is a movie out on this. The Naval Academy at Annapolis was during the American Civil War was moved to Newport, Rhode Island. Also on this day, 1913, during the Woodrow Wilson administration, U.S. senators were elected by popular vote. They used to be the state legislatures appointed the U.S. senators, and then that changed. Also, during the Woodrow Wilson administration in 1914, they set up Mother's Day. In 1927, in Australia, Canberra became the capital. I didn't get there when I was a correspondent down there. In 1936, Italy, under Mussolini, decided, we're going to go back to Africa. They annexed Ethiopia, and then Haile Selassie, who was the emperor and Lion of Judah, went to the then League of Nations to complain, but they ignored him. In 1941, the Enigma, the machine that a Polish engineer brought to Britain, they were able to break all the German naval and military codes, and this is one of the reasons that the Allies won the war, because they could read what the Germans were planning and what they were doing. And also, on this day, the first Native American saint was proclaimed by the Vatican, an Indian woman named Katahiri Takakawita. Of course, last week we had two popes, never happened before, who were declared saints by Pope Francis. In 1944, the first eye bank was set up in New York City. In 1944 also, the Russians recaptured Crimea, Odessa, and we're still hearing about this today because this goes back in Russian history. It's also the site of a big naval base for the Russians. On May 9th, it's celebrated Victory in Europe Day in Red Square. There's a big celebration, but we didn't get together for that right now. Newton Minow, who was in the Adlai Stevenson Law Firm, I did meet him once, and I knew Adlai Stevenson when I worked in federal courthouse. He was appointed to the Federal Communications Commission, and he declared that TV at that time was a vast wasteland, and it still is in some people's mind. 1977, Patty Hearst of the Hearst media family, she was released from jail after her involvement. She said she was coerced by the Symbionese Liberation Army. Among the things that racism that we should be paying attention to, it's very endemic in American history. We can go back to the founding of the country. Thomas Jefferson had an affair with Sally Hemings, and the descendants are still come down to this day. As I was doing my research on presidents and animals, Jefferson, who was quite an agronomist. He brought French wines, vineyard, saplings to the United States. He did a lot of things at Monticello, but he's very upset about how the blacks treated animals. And I guess you could say this is a form of racism, even though the Africans have a long history of veterinary husbandism and how they treated animals in Africa. And, of course, they were brought here by slaves. As slaves. Also coming down to American history, Abraham Lincoln didn't think blacks could survive in the United States as equal citizens, and so he proposed that they go back to Africa to a place that's even in existence today called Liberia. Down through American history, we have Teddy Roosevelt, who expressed his own racist sentiments about Asians. He referred to the Japanese as plucky little Japs and to the Chinese as goddamn dirty Chinese. That's his saying. Also, one of the most notorious episodes in his administration, there was an all-black military division, and I think it was in Texas. I forgot the city. There was a race riot, and Teddy Roosevelt ordered court-martials and a disbanding of this entire black division. So if that wasn't racist, because there were whites who in those days used to stir up trouble and lynch blacks, and even if they wore the uniform of the United States. Woodrow Wilson, Thomas Woodrow Wilson, he was one of these prim Presbyterians. Actually, he was born in Virginia, became governor of New Jersey, president of Princeton University, and became president of the United States. He was supposedly the first president to resegregate Washington, D.C. He had a different view on blacks. Coming down to further in American history, during World War I and World War II, black divisions were segregated. Even in World War II, we had the Red Ball Express, which blacks were segregated, but they were to be drivers and to do the very heavy work to provide Patton's Army and others with gasoline and munitions and their supplies. They were not desegregated, even though Eleanor Roosevelt proposed to FDR, and I guess he didn't want to do it, that blacks could perform equally as well as whites. She went up in an airplane at the Tuskegee Institute, where they were training blacks to become American pilots. And during World War II, blacks flew in Europe the P-40s, which protected the B-17s from the Luftwaffe. After the war, even though President Truman from Missouri referred to quote, blacks as Negroes, he was the one that ordered the desegregation of the American armed forces. During World War II, George Wallace served in the U.S. Army Air Force, or it was called the Army Air Force. We didn't have a separate Air Force then. And he was a poor white from Alabama. And a lot of the poor whites were treated as bad, almost as bad as the blacks. And he ran for political office, and he was defeated because one of his statements, he said he wasn't going to be out-niggered again. And that's where a lot of his racist statements came from. And when he ran, when he stood in the doorway of the University of Alabama, I think it was the Authoring Lucy case, he had to make a stand for segregation, and he made that statement, segregation now and forever, which he later regret. Then he was later shot and paralyzed, and he began to realize the error of his ways. But racism, it's not only people like Sterling who make these statements. We have black racism. We have Asian racism. Every group looks down on another group or even within their group. For instance, black men do not like white men going after black women. I've seen this time and time again. We have, even in, among the Semitic groups, Austrian Jews are of Jewish heritage, they probably don't even go to the synagogue, they look down on the Sephardics. We have light-skinned blacks or high yellers who look down on coal black blacks. I used to go with a black girl, and I was told, don't bring this black bitch to my house. These kind of racism we have in China, in Asia. The Chinese look down on a lot of people, and among gays and lesbians, there are a lot of white gays who don't like black gays, and white lesbians who don't like black lesbians. And so these things go on. There's these elements of racism. This is not to say that all groups are totally racist, but racist sentiments, racist feelings are among a lot of groups, and there are individuals of varying minorities and majorities who look down on other groups even within their own ethnicity. So this is something people have to work on. Now, we're coming to travel season to California. A lot of people want to get away from the snow, and they've had it. And during the 60s, with the Mamas and Papas, there was a famous song called, entitled, If You're Coming to San Francisco, Wear Flowers in Your Hair. Well, that was the flower, love, and pre-sex, and drugs, and all of that. Well, it's changed quite a bit. San Francisco is in the grip of condomania. We have people who have come here not to create and contribute, but to co-opt and corrupt. What's going on is there's a growing chasm between people who lived here who have been getting by, and it's a very livable city, or was, and there are people who come in here to get everything they can. They want it all and then some. And so we're going to be running our series since my ancestors on my mother's side helped found California, lived here a long time, and worked with the Haight-Ashbury Switchboard and Sheriff Hengisto and various other public groups, police department, the health department, school district, and so we know a lot about the city, and we're going to be giving you tips on how to survive safely and securely when you come not only to San Francisco, but to California. And so among the things we'll be telling you, if you're hungry and you've run out of money, nobody can starve in San Francisco. There's a lot of free food around and good food. If you need to take a shower, if you need shelter, there are places. There's not the old Haight-Ashbury Switchboard like there used to be, but there are places that can help provide you with a place to lay your head at night safely without getting ripped off or raped. Also, there are places where you can get free clothes, free food, and a lot of things. And what's great about San Francisco is, and the Bay Area is, there are people out here who want to help other people. Some of us have been there, and it's time to repay those who are less fortunate. And so we'll be presenting that, and also on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. And so I think this is relevant. A rare interview we have with Teddy Roosevelt, who an amazing guy. He knew a lot about animals. He was a writer. He was, quote, a progressive, Sherman Antitrust Act, a lot of things that he tried to do. But he was a prisoner and a product of his time. So I think, this is a rare interview of him, and let me play it. Also, one thing about Warren Harding, we keep hearing that Barack Hussein Obama is our first black president. That's not true. Warren G. Harding, when he ran for office, he was accused, from Ohio, he was accused of having Negro blood. That was the expression used at that time. And he used to say, hey, I can't help it if my ancestors jumped over the back fence. And also one of these stupid things that the Southerners used to try to lay on blacks, saying if you had one drop of black blood, you were a Negro. And how do you tell this? How do they tell these things? But these were people who were victims, I won't say victims, but they were products of their time, and it's time to move on, and we're all brothers and sisters, and all blood is red. But let me play this little interview of Teddy Roosevelt.
The great fundamental issue now before our people can be stated briefly. It is, are the American people fit to govern themselves, to rule themselves, to control themselves? I believe they are. My opponents do not. I believe in the right of the people to rule. I believe that the majority of the plain people of the United States will, day in and day out, make fewer mistakes in governing themselves than any smaller class or body of men, no matter what their training, will make in trying to govern them. I believe again that the American people are, as a whole, capable of self-control and of learning by their mistakes. Our opponents pay lip loyalty to this doctrine, but they show their real beliefs by the way in which they champion every device to make the nominal rule of the people a sham. I am not leading this fight as a matter of aesthetic pleasure. I am leaving because somebody must leave, or else the fight would not be made at all. I prefer to work with moderates, with rational conservatives, provided only that they do in good faith strive forward towards the light. But when they halt and turn their backs to the light, sit with the scorners on the seats of reaction, then I must part company with them. We, the people, cannot turn back. Our aim must be steady, wise progress. It would be well if our people would study the history of a sister republic. All the woes of France for a century and a quarter have been due to the folly of her people in splitting into the two camps of unreasonable conservatism and unreasonable radicalism. Had pre-revolutionary France listened to men like Turgot and backed them up, all would have gone well. But the beneficiaries of privilege, the Bourbon reactionaries, the short-sighted ultra-conservatives, turned down Turgot and then found that instead of him they had obtained Robespierre. They gained 20 years' freedom from all restraint and reform at the cost of the whirlwind of the Red Terror, and in their turn the unbridled extremists of the Terror induced a blind reaction. And so, with convulsion and oscillation from one extreme to another, with alternations of violent radicalism and violent Bourbonism, the French people went through misery toward a shattered goal. May we profit by the experiences of our brother Republicans across the water, and go forward steadily, avoiding all wild extremes. And may our ultra-conservatives remember that the rule of the Bourbons brought on the revolution. And may our would-be revolutionaries remember that no Bourbon was ever such a dangerous enemy of the people and of freedom as the professed friend of both Robespierre. There is no danger of a revolution in this country, but there is grave discontent and unrest. And in order to remove them, there is need of all the wisdom and probity and deep-seated faith in and purpose to uplift humanity we have at our command. Friends, our task as Americans is to strive for social and industrial justice achieved through the genuine rule of the people. This is our end, our purpose. The methods for achieving the end are merely expedients, to be finally accepted or rejected according as actual experience shows that they work well or ill. But in our hearts we must have this lofty purpose, and we must strive for it in all earnestness and sincerity, or our work will come to nothing. In order to succeed, we need leaders of inspired idealism, leaders to whom are granted great visions, who dream greatly and strive to make their dreams come true, who can kindle the people with the fire from their own burning souls. The leader for the time being, whoever he may be, is but an instrument to be used until broken and then to be cast aside. And if he is worth his salt, he will care no more when he is broken than a soldier cares when he is sent where his life is forfeit, in order that the victory may be won. In the long fight for righteousness, the watchword for all of us is spend and be spent.
That was Teddy Roosevelt, a rare recording from the archives. And we'll end with our usual politics and poker. I don't think Teddy Roosevelt played poker even when he was out on out there in the West.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and politics or poker? Which is more important?
Paratrace.
Bet'em.
Well, we're not betting, but anyway, we'll be back Monday, and hopefully I have our all our rest of our technical problems handled. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas. Have a safe weekend. Hopefully spring and summer will be here soon. And to all you mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. Good night.